This is the Illuminate Podcast, a Sandy Boy production. Each week on the Illuminate Podcast, the hosts will bring you insightful conversations and stories of people who are illuminating their own lives through their business, work, community, family, and world.
Hello, and welcome to the Illuminate Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Dr. Emmy Birch, and today, if you've always wanted to learn about singing, maybe about why your voice feels different now than it did when you were younger, maybe what's coming, maybe you just have always wondered if there was a way to get started. I don't know what it is, but I'm really excited for you to meet my friend, Laura Stewart. Laura is a vocal pedagogue. That means she knows a lot about technique, and she lives and works in DC. In this episode, we talk about how you can get past the jargon and how you can just find joy in singing. It was such a fun conversation, but really go look at the link. Laura has the best website, thevocalwarmup.com, to get you started. No jargon, just joy. And Laura will explain it all right here on the podcast. Today, we are talking to my new friend, Laura Stewart. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
I'm so excited this conversation is happening. How are you today in the beautiful snowy Maryland?
Oh, I'm so happy. It's our first proper snow day. So you can see the snow behind me. And here I am, just happy for a cozy chat.
I'm also really thrilled. I'm going to tell the listeners, you went sledding this morning.
I did go sledding on about a quarter inch of snow, but we'll take what we can get.
That sounds like so much fun. I don't think I've been sledding in like a decade.
I will say I didn't go by myself. I have two kids who are 10 and 7, so we went together, but you know, no shame if I had gone by myself.
That's so much fun. Okay, let's start with telling the listener, who is Laura Stewart and how did you get into this music education, singing choir world?
Sure. So my name is Laura Stewart. I am a singer and a singing teacher in Washington, D.C. And my day job is as head of voice at the Washington National Cathedral. So during the daytime, I teach voice lessons, individual singing lessons to the little neck ruffle children who sing at like the presidential services. And then my other teaching function is with a private studio, and I really am passionate about teaching adults, particularly volunteer adult choral singers. And so in that vein, I have a website and a YouTube channel called The Weekly Warm-Up, where I share what I call clear, fun voice education for adult singers. And I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about it, but I just feel like adult volunteer singers are this really kind of amazing resource in the world of music, and they don't receive as much support and as much encouragement as they deserve. So that's where I'm trying to bridge the gap.
Well, I love your excitement and your enthusiasm about that demographic. And I have to say, spoiler alert, I was already like prepped on how amazing you are from our music director here at church in Savannah, Georgia, because I'm pretty sure we snatched George from y'all at the cathedral.
You did. And we have only minimal hard feelings about it.
Okay, good.
We're happy because we know he's so happy there.
Good. Well, that makes it all the better. And I know that he's brought you down to do workshops, and the singers in our aging volunteer church choir rave about it. The number of them that use your warm-ups on a regular basis. We used your warm-ups with my community choir for about 6 months. That's it was funny. So much fun. So to finally understand how did you get into singing all this? Like, did you sing growing up? Did you know this is what you wanted your career to look like?
That's a great question. Cause you know, despite my best efforts, I've ended up with this amazing, amazing career, but it's not what I set out to do.
There we go.
I grew up in central Pennsylvania, and I went to church and I went to school. So I sang in the choirs at church and school, but I was not like a kid with a great voice. I didn't have solos. I wasn't kind of a child star. And when we got into high school, I knew that my two best friends would be in the auditioned choir. And so I thought, well, I guess I'd just better take some voice lessons to see if I can get myself up to the level so that purely for social reasons, I can be in the top choir. And it just so happened that the woman who went to my church who taught voice lessons was Joan Boydom, who is the editor of this incredible series of books, If I have one right here, I'll show it to you because every singer knows these books.
Oh, that's exciting. I love when there's like those serendipitous connections that you don't know as like a 15, 16 year old is going to be just like monumental in your career. But oh my gosh, yes, I have all of those.
Everybody who's ever taken a voice lesson has taken these. And Joan Boydham was the woman who lived in my small town who taught voice lessons. And she was such an incredible teacher. She still is. I just had coffee with her a couple of weeks ago. And she really demystified singing. You know, I went in thinking, I don't have any talent, but I really want to get into this choir. And she was so no nonsense and matter of fact about everything. She just said, you know, talent is sort of irrelevant. As long as you're not profoundly tone deaf, you can sing, it's fine. And she just said, look, there is a correct way to sing. I'll show you how to do it. It's not hard. And it's very simple. And, you know, that doesn't mean that it's easy to kind of get to an elite level, but that it really, there is no mystery to the basics of good singing. And that idea that you don't need some kind of magical innate talent to be a good singer, and that really any person with just some information that is clear and correct can improve their own singing. And so I studied with her for all of high school. And by the time I got to the end of high school, I was not just in that auditioned choir, but I was singing solos and I double majored in music in college. And so sort of fast forward through there, I basically moved on to a career as a solo singer, all classical. And I went through 2 degrees actually at New England Conservatory. And I was just kind of heading out into the world of opera. And then at that time, I moved to Washington, D.C., which is where I now make my home. And D.C. is really much more a choir town than an opera town.
Mm-hmm.
So when I moved here, my focus sort of shifted to oratorio work, concert work, professional choral work. And so I started singing in a lot of choirs with a lot of adult volunteer singers, you know, church jobs, community groups. And I started getting grownups who would say, hey, would you teach me a couple of voice lessons? And at that point, you know, I had never taken a pedagogy class. I had no interest in music education, but I did know what went on in a good voice lesson. I've been very lucky, not just with Joan, but throughout my whole career as a musician, I've always really lucked out by just finding my way to teachers who were great. They were smart. They were clear. They didn't do weird stuff. And so basically, I never had anybody mess me up, which I think is a really common story for singers. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like, well, when these colleagues of mine and friends of mine were asking for singing lessons, I thought, okay, you know, I'll give it a try. And that's really where the second chapter of my musical journey started, because I realized that in a way that I've never really felt about singing, although I still sing, I love singing, but I really feel that my true kind of professional destiny is in teaching. And so in that vein, I really started teaching a lot of adults. And I'll just tell you a quick story, because this conversation, I had it so many times. I would get a phone call, and I pick up the phone, and it would be somebody, an adult singer, who would say, I'm calling to see if you would take me on as a voice student, but you have to know I'm a total beginner. Like, I know nothing at all. And I'm wondering if you would just be willing to do like total basics. And I would say, yeah, sure. You know, we can do basics. How did you get my number? And I'm telling you, I heard this from so many people. They would say, oh, well, I got your number from the conductor of my choir or whatever. I've been in the choir for 35 years. And, you know, I would hear this from people who had been singing for decades and were like doctors and teachers and competent, intelligent adults who still felt as though they somehow knew nothing about singing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, I mean, I can teach a number of these people one-on-one, but it just started to occur to me, like, are choirs just filled with people who are intelligent, competent adults who feel like there's something wrong with them, that they don't know how to sing? And so I started holding like group voice workshops. And the idea there was to just sort of demystify singing and give singers like a toolbox of basics with really clear, simple information. This is how breathing actually works. This is what support actually is. And I started doing these for groups. And then, of course, the pandemic hit. And I just sort of had this feeling like everybody is stopping singing, and especially all of these singers whose musical identity is entirely wrapped up in the groups that they sing with, they've stopped singing altogether. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I just wish there was some way that I could teach a lesson to every person who is sitting in their living room, missing choir rehearsal, feeling like their voice is just like deteriorating over this years-long break in their singing career. And I thought, well, you know what? I can just go on YouTube and I can just put up a video of like, here's a breathing exercise that you could do in your house. And, you know, here's how to use a straw to practice straw phonation. And it was really interesting because as soon as I started it, I started getting like emails from people around the world. And the fact was, everybody felt exactly the same way. It was like, we love singing. It is so important to us. And we all want to be able to do it. And something as small as like a 5-minute video from some stranger on YouTube is enough for people to understand that like the magic is not in the music itself or a charismatic conductor or even like the presence of other people. Like no matter how amazing the circumstance is, when the rubber meets the road, the sound has to actually come out of your own self. And it really is possible for every single singer, no matter their age or their situation, to improve their own singing. And so I really got obsessed with this idea that like, not everyone can be Renee Fleming, but everyone can look at their own singing and improve it. And it's just not that complicated to get better at singing. It's not like a magical talent. It's just a skill and you can learn to do it. So that's sort of where I started. And now I post weekly videos that are usually, those are more like technique-based exercises. And then I send a weekly newsletter also. And that gets a little bit more into some of the mental stuff. And you know, we can talk about that more if you want, but I just feel like there are kind of three areas of skill that singers need. And they are like the technical skills. Like you need to be able to make the sound come out of your body. And then there's the musical skills. And this is one of the ones where I think a lot of adult singers, either if they've been away from music for a long, long time, maybe they did music as kids and they're away from it, or a lot of choral singers have never done music before and they get into it post-career. So it's like they either feel like there's a lack of information or their information is old. And so I think that musicianship element is like a second leg of the tripod. So you've got technique, you've got musicianship, but then there's also like the mental game of music. Yes. And so I talk about that a lot in the newsletter, and that's just something that I send out on Fridays, and it can be just silly or encouraging sometimes. But that's sort of where things are now. And then I also, as you mentioned with the Savannah Choir, I also sometimes go out and do clinics for choirs. So I'll just jump in and work on either basic technique, or I did a really fun workshop this last year on chant, which was fun. So yeah, my whole thing is to like empower the individual singer within the choir.
I love that empowerment factor. And I'm so happy that you brought up all three. It's not just your technique and your musicianship, but it's also the mental state. I'm teaching a class right now called Singing for the Actor. And some of the students in the class are all in. They probably sang in choir in high school, in middle school, or they were in a ton of musicals. And then I have the handful of students that are eyeballs bigger than silver dollars when I said you're singing in front of the class, and that nerve. And I want to know, have you talked to some of your adults? I hear so often that idea of, well, I'm such a beginner, but they've sang in a choir for decades. Do you think it's the lack of confidence or the imposter syndrome, or just not possessing enough of the skills or transferring the skills from all the rehearsals? What do you think is making that big barrier for them always feeling like a beginner?
That's a great question. I think there Well, I think the first thing is just a major misunderstanding. I think that a huge number of people, and this is definitely not just adults, I see this with my kids, students also. I think there's this assumption that when you reach a certain level of technique and a certain level of musicianship, then you will have confidence. Mm. And like that confidence is something that accrues with skill. And it's just not true. I mean, you know, you read any celebrity memoir and you know that like literally every person who ever has to get out in front of other people and do something vulnerable, it's scary. And the confidence is actually its own thing. So I think that is, I mean, kind of like singing, that I think the mental game of music is a skill that can be developed right alongside, like on a parallel track with your musical development and your technical development. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing. But I would say particularly when it comes to adult singers, the biggest kind of gap for confidence is that they think that singing is separate in some way from the rest of their lives, you know, and so they think that all of the thousands of books that they've read and the languages they speak and the experiences they've had and the understanding and the faith and all of the things that accrue over a lifetime, just being a person, that when they forget that that all informs and enriches your singing, you know, if you know that you're a person who has an intuitive grasp of language and the true poetic concept that a piece is trying to convey, and, you know, then how can you feel like you're in any way less than some, you know, I don't know, some gunslinger 15-year-old who has high A's to burn? It's just a very different thing. So I think separating life experience and sort of just general wiliness and smarts from musical skill is another major misconception.
I love how clearly and concisely you're pinpointing some of the issues that are the root of that imposter syndrome or even the fear of stepping forward. I always tell my students that if nerves are good, if you don't have any nerves, if you don't have just a little fear, there's something missing that might not be the right place for you because those nerves tell you that you care.
Yeah,
and absolutely. I think that's such an important thing to embrace. So we've talked about just this approach of why the adult singer and why the adult volunteer. You've done a great job of kind of setting the stage for that. Can we talk about the voices at ages? Because this is something we talked about in class last week, because my voice, when I was a lot like what you said in your story, I was always like that teeny tiny voice, wasn't very good, probably didn't get into the audition choir. But through developing my voice, I've learned how to teach. And that's huge. But I tell my students all the time, you are 18, 19, 20 years old. You have 10 to 15 years before you reach the peak of your vocal development. So can you give us a little rundown? What happens as your voice ages?
Sure, of course. Well, so if you're looking at like the actual like body parts nitty gritty of what happens, the biggest changes in our voices occur when there are hormonal shifts. And so, you know, I have to say, I feel like I became much more, let me rephrase that. I feel like a lot of the work that I do with adolescent boys and a lot of the work that I do with menopausal women is like exactly the same.
Yeah.
Which is that, you know, basically you are experiencing a hormonal change, which may manifest in like a bazillion different ways. You know, I have 14-year-old boys whose voices, they just lose a half step every week. And then later on, they're Barry White, and it just couldn't be easier, and it's so smooth. And then the other ones, it's like a hole here and a hole here, and they're up and they're down, and it's a disaster. And it's the same with women as their voices develop through menopause. And the thing is that like, it's so tempting, especially I think when we're dealing with women's voices, that people just think like they want us to say what happens and like what's different. And so people love to say that women's voices, they lose their high notes and they get a big wobbly vibrato as they get older. And the fact is, if you actually listen to the voices of, I don't know, some section of women above the age of 50, you'll see that those things can happen. They also can happen to people under the age of 50. But also, a lot of women's voices kind of stay the same. And a lot of women's voices go in the opposite direction and will either, they'll lose the low and the top will kind of either extend or continue, or the voice will thin or become a little bit brittle. There's just so many things that can happen. And of course, for many of them, there are anatomical differences. You know, like what basically happens as we get older is that we lose collagen everywhere mm-hmm. and in our vocal cords, and the vocal cords get a little thinner. But the thing that I would say is, like, when we talk about the aging voice, my 7-year-old daughter has an aging voice. We are all aging through our whole lives. And, you know, basically, we're going to have changes to the way that our voices function every time there's a change in the way our body functions. And so while the hormonal shifts will be most direct on that, there will also be things that affect it. Like if you have a hip replacement and you are standing differently, and then your alignment is different, and then your breathing is different, and everything is different. Basically, as long as you have a human body, your voice will be changing. And I would say the kind of, and I should have said this a long time ago, I'm not a doctor. Like, I don't know. I picked this stuff up along the way. But what it really seems from having taught and also having an aging body myself is that almost exclusively when problems crop up, when problems such as, you know, fatigue or a change in tone or vibrato issues, these kinds of things generally tend to happen because of what we do in response to the changes in our body, rather than because of the body just changing. So I'll take my first voice teacher as a perfect example. She turned 90 last year, and she has now stopped singing with the church choir. But up until very recently, she sang. And she is someone who is an exceptional vocal technician and sings with exceptional vocal technique. And so she sang for years as the best alto in the choir. And then she did a few decades as the best tenor in the choir. And then she led the bass section. Her voice just dropped in pitch, but it was always technically very sound because she never tensed against it, fought against it, fought against any of the changes that were happening. And I think that drastic of a drop in range is not typical of every singer. But I think her acceptance and kind of flexibility is what we should all strive to model, which is just that if things start to feel a little different, there's a real tendency to want to go back to the way things used to feel. And I think what we always need to be striving for is what feels most comfortable, what feels most effective. And so, you know, now I'm in my mid-40s. I've had 2 pregnancies. I've, of course, gone through puberty, and menopause is not far away for me. And so I feel like the whole challenge is in just kind of holding the reins lightly rather than freaking out every time there's a new change in the voice.
It's so much like what you said earlier, in that you can't divide what you've experienced in life with what you're experiencing as a musician. You can't divide what you're experiencing in your body with what you're experiencing as a singer. And I mean, it's always so funny on that first day when we're warming up or whatever, and I'm super open with the singers. If you are on your cycle right now, you are going to sound different.
Yep.
If you are, and the looks on the faces when I say that, because it's just something that I think is, you've got to get more comfortable talking about it. You have to be aware that it's changing. And so last week, it was so funny. One of the students came to office hours and was like, I'm struggling with this part of my range. Can you help me? We were singing. It was sounding breathy. And all of a sudden, I'm like, is this normal? Is this a part of your range that you're normally struggling through? And they were like, no. And I'm like, hold on a second. Are you on your period right now? And the look on her face was like, and then she's like, yeah. And it just clicked. I'm like, can you give it a couple days and send me a text if it doesn't go back? And literally 48 hours later, oh my gosh, all the breathiness is gone.
I'm fine. Yeah. I mean, it's really funny because I think, and the thing is, like, this is where you have to really encourage the singer to have knowledge, have information. Mm-hmm. So you know, if that singer had known that, you know, swelling in the vocal cords is pretty typical and this will happen, maybe that concern wouldn't have come up. But also empowering that singer to say, like, I know what it feels like when I'm on my cycle. And I know that what I'm feeling right now is not right.
Right.
You know, and I think that's kind of yet another side of this same idea of like, at the end of the day, you're the one who's in charge of your own singing. And so if you know that something is wrong, and you know, there is a difference between your body maturing and injury or illness or something that is actually wrong. You know, there's like, there's dysfunction and then there's changed function. And we have to be the ones who ultimately decide which one that is and when you need to seek help, you know, medical help or kind of pedagogical help. So I think it's really having that information for your student, I'm sure was such a relief, but also empowered her next time she's feeling breathiness to just say like, is this what I'm used to feeling? Is this a different thing? You know, and now that student is in the driver's seat.
Which is so important. And I don't know if you follow Jacob Collier, but right before the first day of classes, he posted the best reel ever, which is just my whole philosophy of teaching, which is I'm going to throw every possible technique at you. There is not good technique and bad technique. It's what works for your space, for your voice. There's not good music and bad music. It's what works for your ear and your mentality. Let's switch gears now and actually talk vocal technique. What are some of the big pillar vocal techniques that you share with your singers, especially as they're aging?
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the best things that we can do, and I will say, having grown up, I didn't grow up with a teacher who was super anatomically based. And in fact, I've never had a teacher who was like getting out the skeleton and the model of the lungs and all these things. I've done a ton of study in that realm myself because I find it fascinating. But I do wish that I had seen a picture of how breathing works and understood why. Because I think, you know, there's just something about telling a room full of like adult people who are like doctors, like breathe into your stomach. And then they're like, I don't think I'm doing it right. When like, it's just not possible. That's not a thing. So I think in terms of vocal technique, I would say number one, I totally agree. Like, I don't think that you have to breathe into your back, into your belly, into, you know, like a high breath. I think actually probably could work for somebody. That student has not come across my studio yet, but like, I don't want to tell anybody, like, if it's working for you, then stop doing it. I think whatever you find that is functional and comfortable, that's, you know, keep it up. But I would say rather than promoting any one breath approach, I think it's really important that every singer understand what a belly breath is, what a breath that like an intercostal breath is, the mobility of the ribs, the structure of the diaphragm. I think those things are super important, not to be prescriptive, but so that every singer, when they're doing it, they can understand what is happening in their own body. And then they can make the choice because, you know, within my student, I have students who are absolutely side rib breathers, back breathers, belly breath people. And I think all of those are fine, but I really hope that I do not have anybody in my studio who's trying to breathe down in their belly because they think air can go in their stomach or they think it's just what they've been told to do.
Right. That's so important too. And we just did anatomy last week and I made these really awesome worksheets. This is why I'm not an artist, but I am totally a singer. My worksheets were adorable. But it was so fun to hear at the end of the class when they were sharing like the one thing they really walked away from class with. They were all enamored with, oh my gosh, I've been hearing X, Y, and Z in my voice lessons for my whole life. And now I see where that is. And the power of the C, the power of the application.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, you know, just like when you actually understand that your ribs are hinged and not like a locked cage, then suddenly just that sight informs your singing. And then it invites a whole world of exploration of how you can do it differently. So I think that's a huge thing. I think another huge idea that I really try to promote through my teaching is that correct alignment for singing is not standing up or sitting up straight, but really finding a way to transfer weight through the skeleton into the supporting surface. And that is something that literally everybody can do. If you are a 9-year-old with scoliosis, if you're an adult who's had both hips replaced, it does not matter. Like, whatever we can do to get your weight to transfer through the bones of your body so that the muscles are free for singing, I think that's just, it is the most essential starting place. Because as soon as that is going on, and you know, it does not look the same for everybody, and it doesn't even look like standing up straight for some people. But I think working on that so that we have a starting place that is really allowing the most muscular action possible, you know, then we can really get cooking.
I love that visual, because we always talk about in my classes, how is it for you? Because I'm a very short human, so I have to sit on the front of chairs because I just don't reach the ground.
Yeah.
But through my whole life of singing in schools, that would give me like, look at that posture that Emily has. I'm like, I'm just trying to touch the floor, people. But figuring out how do you sit to where you have the space to breathe is what I usually say. But I love what you've given. Giving all of your bones the opportunity to hold your structure.
Absolutely.
So that your muscles are free to breathe. What a gorgeous analogy, like visual, not analogy, visual.
Yeah. I mean, the skeleton, man, it is awesome. I've done a lot of work this year, particularly with Barbara Connable's work. And, you know, if I can recommend like one book to every person who's listening to your podcast, it is What Every Musician Needs to Know About the Body by Barbara Connable. This is just, I mean, and it looks like a comic book. It's like so simple and slim, but you can, once you understand the way that your body is constructed and the way that it is meant to function, just in terms of its anatomy, and it's not super complicated. So much of singing, and like everything else you do, is totally demystified. So I think that idea of kind of alignment that is functional and breath that is informed and functional, that's where we begin. Everything else from there, you know, then we're like into the little stuff, the head stuff, and that is all, so much of it is like cosmetic. You know, it's, do we want a high palate? Well, I mean, most of the time, probably, yeah, but there's no like morality associated with having a high palate. You know what I mean? Or like,
yes.
I don't know. I think that's kind of, and that's another sort of side thing, but that really does tap into, I think, a lot of the mental piece of it is that there's just like, there is no morality associated with singing in tune, singing high, taking less breaths. Like, I think there's all this weird stuff that singers have attached kind of moral value to, that you think that you're a better singer and a better member of your choir if you never run out of breath and if you can always sing the high notes and you never have vibrato and all of these things. And we end up tying ourselves in knots on stuff that is like so...
not crucial. It's not silly. Existential. No,
it's not essential. It's so silly. And it's all just cosmetic. So, yeah, I think that's technique. I love talking about technique, but I also think a lot of it is one-on-one. And as you said, like what works in your physical body.
That's so important. I'm so glad we're having this conversation. It's at such a perfect time for me personally, and I'm so excited for my students to listen to it. And I know I'll include the link for your YouTube page as well as how to sign up for the newsletter. So I know a ton of people will benefit from that and that you can get more of that one-on-one work in your own space to find what's informed and functional for you. But what is the one thing for the listener who's like, I need the thing that's going to get me over to the hump, make me feel empowered. What's the one thing for you?
Technically or in your brain?
How about both? Because I would love to know what you say for both of those.
Okay, let me think. Yeah, technically, I would say, I don't want to sound like a weird cryptic guru, but I would say support does not feel like resistance. Mm. So you need to feel air going out of your body in order to sing. Like the singing is air and air needs to leave your body. And that is, you know, I say that not because it's like, I think the golden keystone of all technique ever, but I think that that is, if I was talking to a room of choral singers, I find that 80 to 90% of singers who sing in choirs are limiting their air in an effort to feel support. And that kind of like airlocked, blocked feeling is what I think we're often told to feel is muscular support. So I would say support feels like motion and support feels like airflow. And in terms of mental thing, I would just probably say that it is fully within every singer's power to improve his or her own singing.
That is so empowering in and of itself, just right there, knowing that no matter where you are in your aging voice process, that it's within your reach and within your grasp to improve whatever it is, whatever you've been given. But it goes back to, I've taken so many quotes from you that I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I have 8 sticky notes. Hold please while I find the sticky note that I want to reference. The one where you said it has to, you have to do strive for what feels the most comfortable and functional. And be okay with that flexibility. I think that's such an empowering message.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the thing that's important about that is that it puts the responsibility back on you. You know, I think a lot of us, especially choir people, are like people pleasers. Like, you're like, I want to sing this dot on this page. I want to sing it in tune and I want to make it as beautiful as possible for you, my choral director and audience who I adore. You know, we're givers. We're like the yellow labs of the musical world. I think that it's like so wonderful. But the fact is, like, you also have to do it for yourself. The reason why you're doing it is because it's fun. And so you also need to check, like, I know it's fun in the large sense, but like, are you also having fun in your body right at this moment? And if it's not fun because it's uncomfortable or it's not working properly, then that's the time to seek it out. So it's like, I don't mean that I want you to seek fun at all times so that you're like, woo, but like, if you are having a negative physical or mental experience in choir, but you love music, that's a disconnect. And like, singing should be fun when you think about doing it, but it should also be fun while you're actually doing it. And so, you know, if you are not finding, like, if your support always feels like you're sort of blocking, you know, this sort of like, kind of support thing that is so common. And like, I think that blocked feeling, so many singers think, yeah, I know it's not comfortable, but I think it's what I'm supposed to be doing. And I think it's what's right. So I'm just going to keep doing it. And I think that's the time when it's, you have to actually ask yourself, is this actually comfortable? Because singing should not feel terrible. It really is something that like our human bodies are designed to do, and it's designed to be pleasurable. So I think we really should be asking ourselves and really trusting ourselves even more than that wonderful person on the podium at the front of the room. Like, does this feel right? And if you can be honest with yourself and know, if it feels right, it probably sounds pretty good.
What great thoughts for us to wrap this episode up on. I went and saw the Taylor Swift Eras Tour film. Yay! at a theater here in town. My university has this gorgeous theater, and the lighting crew did the whole lights in the theater to mimic the lighting of the concert. It was amazing. But the whole time I was just sitting back, basking in the singing of the entire audience. And it's what you just said. We are meant for singing, and we are just, if it feels good, if it's fun. I wasn't listening for tension. I wasn't listening for bad breath. It was just pure singing joy. And my face hurt from smiling, just listening to these hundreds of people sing at the top of their lungs to this fantastic concert.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think that's, of course, you're right. It's like, as singing educators, we can get very wrapped up in like, you've got a little bit of tongue tension there, you know, and kind of nitpicking. But the fact is, like, that's all details. And the main goal is to like sing as joyfully as you can. And if you're asking me, as long as you can, ideally for your whole life. So I think that's kind of where singing really shines, is when it is something that is not something that makes you famous or, you know, makes you a star, but something that really makes you happy your whole life long. That's, I think, the highest that our singing can achieve.
Laura, it's been so much fun talking to you. Thank you for sharing your expertise and experience with us.
Absolutely. It is my pleasure. Come on over and let's keep the conversation going over on the YouTube channel.
I can't wait. Thank you so much.
All right, who's jumping over to the YouTube channel? Who's excited about what your voice is capable of? I know that singing for me is an outlet. It is
it's part of my identity. And so it's so much fun to share these type of stories with you. Thank you so much for listening as we've illuminated all the incredible things that Laura does to help all of us access and self-trust and have joy in singing. So I hope that you've enjoyed the show. Let us know. You can jump over to the Illuminate Pod over on Instagram. Megs and I would love to hear who should we illuminate next. I hope whatever you are doing today, that you know that you are illuminating the world around you, and we're so glad you're here. Have a great one. We'll see you next time.